If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Guys, welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader. And before we get into it with me, I have explaining to do. I wasn't here last week. I have explaining to do. Let's take care of a little business. First things first, I want to thank my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks. Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This grinder is sick, and they have great products, and they have a Black Friday sale going on right now. So you cannot use Knife Talk 10 for 10% off during their Black Friday sale. But let me tell you what, this is your opportunity. This is your opportunity to get yourself squared away. And what I would say is go to BroadbeckIronworks.com and play around. Play around, see what they got going on, and get yourself some of that service because I ain't going to get much better than that. It's got a great their Black Friday sales going on as of now, and it's going on until it's done. So, I mean, you want to get yourself a grinder, you want to get yourself attachments, you want to get yourself a power hammer. They got deals on those too. All right, so go to BroadbeckIronworks.com. Next, my friends, at Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-shield.com. All right. Get yourself tap control, solid state drive. I cannot have this company going without my Even Heats. I got two of them. I got one for heat treating and normalizing and one for tempering. And I mean, it's made my life so much better and I'm making great products. So get yourself an Even Heat, stop playing. Next are my friends at Maritime Knife Supply, makers, suppliers of, for all your knife making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, press, heat treating ovens. I mean, you kidding me? They got what you need. If you are going to get stock, restocked or resupplied, whatever you need, get yourself some of that Even Heat and get yourself some of that. Sorry, I was trying to put my phone on. This is an excellent. There we go. And okay, all right. Yeah, you want to get yourself a Maritime Knife Supply. I mean, these guys are the best. Lawrence is the man, and he is supporting you. He's a knife maker. He knows what you need. So go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. If you're in Canada and you're not using Maritime Knife Supply, shame on you. And if you're in the United States, they got stuff for you too. So go get yourself some of that over at MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. P.S., the Norton Razor Stars, yellow belts, 36s. Damn. You can cut through some shit with that. I'm telling you what. I love them. I love me them Norton Razor Stars, okay? Next, my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Staborough Knife Finishing Vise. Their vise are built in the heart of Texas, and they're meant to take your designs to a whole new level. And you get yourself squared away. If you go to TrojanHorseForge.com, put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you get 10% off. They got knives, too, and they teach classes. I mean, the guys are great. I love my Staborough Knife Finishing Vise. Baker Forge is hooking you up, ladies and gentlemen. You go to BakerForge.com, Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. You got to get yourself some of that Baker Forge. They got the stainless now. They got the stainless Damascus now. All your American needs are asked for and gotten. I mean, unbelievable. And all their stuff is awesome, and they'll get yourself squared away. And if you go to BakerForge.com, you can check out all they have and they'll teach you how to do it. They'll teach you how to cut it. They'll teach you how to grind it. They'll teach you how to heat treat it. And then when you're done heat treating, you got to get yourself a can of the Grime Reaper, which is their degreaser. The Grime Reaper smells like oranges. The Grime Reaper ain't no chemicals in there. Better than brake parts cleaner. Safer for you, too. So get yourself some of that. And then when you're done, when you're ready to etch that piece, you got to put it in that gator piss. You know what I'm saying? GATORPISS, gator short for alligator, piss short for urine. Ain't no better, ain't nothing better than that. You know what I'm saying? And you got to get yourself the OG gator piss. You can get, that's a standard. And then you get the gator piss max. That's for your stainless Damascus. You don't have to use that warmed up muriatic acid anymore. And then you're going to get the Baker Forge. You're going to get that, I have to figure out which animal's urine I got to talk about. You got to get the gator piss heavy for that deep, dark black. You know what I'm saying? So definitely go to BakerForge.com and get yourself some of that copper, my bronze, my sand, my all their Damascuses and the gator piss and the grime reaper. And then they also have gator skin, which is a new stuff that I think it's an oil they put on. Stuff is pretty slick too. Sent me a grip of that. And you can also get your gator piss at Texas Ferry Supply. Go to TexasFerrySupply.com and you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off everything. Highly suggest going to Texas Ferry Supply. Support my boys over there. Get your abrasives. If you're a blacksmith, bladesmith, farrier, however you identify, you want to get yourself over there. You know what I mean? Next are my friends at Total Boat. I love me some Total Boat. TotalBoat.com/FullBlast. You know what they sent me? They sent me a dispenser. And it one pump, and it gives you the exact amount of two-part epoxy that you need. And I love it. I love it. I feel like I'm an epoxy barista. I'm one pump, and there you go. I would get yourself squared away. I love their paints, primers, polishing compounds, all that stuff. And I'm a huge fan of their two-part epoxy and their UV cured resin and their CA glue. I only use their CA glue and then their two-part epoxy for everything. And they got dyes and the Fathom Thick Set is sick. I don't think they call it Thick Set anymore. They call it Fathom Epoxy. It's that deep stuff. If you want to make a hybrid handle material, that stuff is awesome. I had a great time with them. And we're going to be doing a lot more with them. So definitely go to totalboat.com/fullblast. That's the link, the hyperlink that's in your show notes. It's going to give me street cred, but I think I'm good with the street cred with them, but I want a little more. You know what I'm saying? So go get yourself some of that Total Boat. Stop playing. Next are my friends at Gil Hansen & Sons, g.l._Hansen & Sons, at gcarta.bigcartel.com. G-Carta is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed under epoxy with pressure and heat. Bofa, Ripple Cut, Tuxini, Mahi Mahi, Radio Worm G-Carta, Pheasant, Colorama, Hoopla, all this stuff. There's so many different ones. I can't even keep up. I get yourself all sorts of different types of trout patterns, all sorts of different traps. I had a quail. I did a knife made with their quail pattern. That was pretty awesome. I had their blue wave, I had the blue streak. They got all sorts of stuff. You got to see what they got, man. Stuff is awesome. You know, it's gonna put you in a different situation. Get that Mexican blanket. Be like my man Josh Scott. Josh Scott's got that Mexican blanket game down, pat. I actually been using a little Mexican blanket, and I feel like I'm harnessing the energy of Josh Scott. JSK, baby. Stop playing. All right? Go get yourself some of that, and you won't be sorry. Give it a try, because people are starting to ask for it. I get people asking for it by name. So, I mean, that says something. Oh, man, Tormek, stop it. I'm celebrating 50 years of being in business with the Black's TA sharpening system. I'm a huge fan. And then one of the reasons why I didn't have a podcast last week is because Tormek was here. Carl Friends was here at the shop for 2 days. And they're filming a doc, ladies and gentlemen. A short documentary on your boy, on your hero, on your boy, on your hero, on your hero. You know what I'm saying? So we spent all this time, and I got, not only did we get everything needed to be done, which is great. I got all the shot lists squared away. We had plenty of time. I got a behind the scenes real tutoring on the scissor jig. I want to make scissors now. I know how to sharpen scissors like a professional. I use their T2. I use their T1. I'm all in on the T2 and the T1. I'm going to do some content about that now that I can really recommend it because I got I'm now an ambassador, ladies and gentlemen, of Tormek. If you're trying to get involved with sharpening things, go use a Tormek. Stop it. Go use a Tormek. Use the water cool sharpening system. They're great. They have all sorts of great things. The machines are retrofittable. Like if you have an old one, the new stuff works. I love this company and I love the people involved, and I'm going to be very, very involved more with Tormek. But Tormek sharpening on EG, Tormek underscore sharpening on IG, and then Tormek underscore culinary. I believe it's culinary on IG too. But they're great, and the machines are awesome, and I got really, really, I felt like I had a batting coach here. Carl was like my batting coach. He kind of gave me some pointers, and we learned how to use jigs that I had and never even had a chance to use. That scissor jigs, sick. I was cutting everything up. Oh boy, I was cutting paper towels like you wouldn't believe. Go to Tormek underscore sharpening on Instagram. Stop playing. Next, you know what? If you're in Australia and you're saying to yourself, you know what, dude? Fader's talking about all this stuff. I want to know about it. I want to be involved. He makes it sound so much fun. But I don't know if I want it or not. I don't know if I'm ready to commit. Well, here's what you do. You're going to go to Nordic underscore edge on Instagram. And you're going to go to nordicedge.com.au. And then you're going to check out what's going on with Nordic Edge. Nordic Edge is a place where they not only they have knife supplies, blacksmithing supplies, all that stuff, bladesmithing supplies, but they teach classes, spoon carving, leatherworking, blacksmithing, bladesmithing, all that stuff. So you can figure out if you actually like it. I tell you what, this is the big thing that people ask me. What should I buy first? You should get yourself an education. You should figure it out. Maybe you might not. You'll be buying stuff that you probably won't want if you don't have an education. So definitely go to NordicEdge.com. They have the guidance to help you accelerate your creativity and the tools, products, and supplies to help you manifest your ideas. NordicEdge.com.au. And many thanks to my friends at Phoenix Abrasives. They're the suppliers of superior abrasive products for every application, knife making, metal fabrication, glass fabrication, floor sanding, and crankshaft. Belts, grinding, cutting discs, flap discs. Hey, you want to get the discs that you send them a message saying, I need to get me them discs that got those motherfuckers into the Louvre. They'll get it for, okay, no problem. You want it, you got it. They'll get you that's what you got to say. You got to say, I want them discs that get me into the Louvre. They know what these guys know, you know? And when you go to checkout, put in the promo code FB10, and then you get 10% off everything, including them Louvre discs. If I am a metal shop, if I'm a grinder company and I'm making discs, I'm making the Louvre model. I'm making the Louvre model and I'm spray painting the fucking Louvre on there. And I'm going to be like, this is the one. This is the fucking cutoff wheel that got you in, bitch. So definitely go over to phoenixabrasives.com, put in the promo code FB10 and get yourself into the Louvre. You know what I'm saying? All right, guys, listen, all jokes aside, I am sorry that I was not here last week. I'm really sorry that I wasn't here last week. I was planning on it. I was planning on having an episode here. I was planning on being on Full Blast, on Knife Talk. And a few things happened that were out of my control. And I just needed to. I wasn't sinking or swimming. I was just like, just give me just a move. And everything had to move a little bit. And the podcast had to take a break. But I figured you guys didn't care that much. I figured you didn't mind. I figured you understood. I figured you thought Fader just ran the New York City Marathon. I'm sure that it's either PR or ER. Maybe he was in the hospital. Maybe I was in the ER. Have you thought about that? I said on Knife Talk, it's either right before the podcast, I said it's PR or ER. If you don't hear from me, maybe it's the ER. Well, PR, there's PR, there's PR.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, what if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference? You're not alone, and that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University. Set a course for change. Certified to operate by Chev.
ER is one thing, but I didn't really talk about the third option, which is neither. Not PR, ER, or neither. But not or neither doesn't really work so well. So I thought what I'd do is I would tell you why I didn't have a podcast. I'll send that into the second half of the show. And then I thought I'd talk about the New York City Marathon and just kind of recap it. And because it was such an emotional moment, it was such a huge part of my upbringing, of my life. And, it was such a great time And there was so much to unpack. And I was ready to do it last week. But like I said, some shit went south. I couldn't get out of bed on Monday. I was going to record on Monday. Marathon was on Sunday. Monday, I was like, I couldn't get down the stairs, dog. I don't even know how it happened. All right, so let's talk about the marathon. So just real quick, I grew up in New York City. New York City, I refer to as one of my parents, because I was like my latchkey kid. Dad was trying to get his life together. Mom was trying to get their life together separately. I wasn't really kind of part of that whole situation. So I was able to kind of live my life and go see things in New York. And I really believe that in any other city, I would probably be, I'd say a ne'er-do-well, but I'm probably a ne'er-do-well now. I'd say, you know, really just a loser. I think that if I didn't grow up in New York and have the experiences that I did and the interests that I learned and got, I think that it would have been probably pretty bad. I told someone I'd probably be a drug addict, but I don't know if that's the case. I just think I wouldn't be the Jeff Fader of that you know and, you know, tolerate. I mean, that's it. So growing up, I used to go, my mother used to bring me to the park and we used to cheer people on. Sometimes we knew people in the marathon. We'd go to the park and cheer on runners. And it was wherever I was in growing up in New York or living in New York, the New York City Marathon was such a huge part of our, you know, the life of a New Yorker. It was just like part of, especially when I was younger. Going to watch the runners was huge because what it is it's a marathon that starts in Staten Island, then it goes into Brooklyn, into Queens, into New York, into the Bronx, back into New York. And it's like it shuts the whole city down. But it doesn't shut the whole city down as in like what a pain in the ass. It shuts the whole city down as in like this is like a time to celebrate New York. So growing up, I used to love in the morning. I'd watch it on local channel 7, and I'd love watching the runners. And I loved when they would video the runners. I'd say, "Oh, I know where that is," and you knew the different neighborhoods. And oh, I remember that place. And I know that's 59th Street Bridge. I live right near there, and I remember that street. And there's something about, you know, being in a city with this marathon that's just like nothing else. So when I was almost 40. And I was going to run the New York City. I wanted to run the New York City Marathon, but I didn't have any options. Now, before my daughter was born, my wife and I were members of the New York Roadrunners Club. And so this is now like 25 years ago. After college, we really loved joining. We joined the Roadrunners Club, and they would have races in the park on every other weekend. And it was so much fun. And it was like Central Park and everything about it. You met younger people. You got good fitness. And I loved it. And I love being part of that. And if you could run 9 races within the confines of a year, you got free, and you were a member in good standing, you got instant access to the New York City Marathon because it was a real hot ticket to get. So the year we were going to get it, we'd done the half marathons. We'd done everything. We were like planning on it for the following year. Hillary is pregnant, and then that just was like, well, we're not going to run the marathon now. I mean, didn't get a chance to do it. We would have been doing it 2000. We would have gotten in, if Lila wasn't on the way, we would have done the New York City Marathon 2003. We would have definitely done it, but it didn't happen. You know, Hillary was pregnant, and then 2003, our daughter was born in December. So marathon's in the first week of November. So then it was just like, you know, parenthood just kind of takes over all that. And then a number of years ago, I reconnected with a friend of mine from high school who was on the board of the Michael J. Fox Foundation. She was also one of the captains of the team that ran the Michael J. Fox Foundation. These charities run and you raise money and then blah, 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 blah. So I reached out to her. She got me on and I got to run in 2013, I ran the New York City Marathon. I raised money for the Michael J. Fox Foundation, and I was so excited. I definitely trained, but I didn't train well enough, and the shoes I got were bad, and I guess I don't know what happened, and I just, you know, it was really hard, and I'm glad I did it, but it was, like, brutal to the point where I said, I'll never do this again. When I was 39, right? So I'm getting into my 40s, 48, 49, and I get 49, 50. And I thought, you know, maybe I should try it again. Maybe I did something wrong. I always thought that the first time I ran the New York City Marathon, I couldn't replicate running in the city, which is all concrete. And I thought that something on my knees. And I was uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable for the first time. And then by the time I turned 50, it turns out that my friend who had got me in originally had passed away. And I thought to myself, I was in a mood. It was right after the New York City Marathon. I was in a mood. And I was wistful. Wistful of my friend who had got me in. And then I just decided to send a message to the people at New York City, Michael J. Fox Foundation, and just kind of reconnect. And I thought, let's just see what happens. And I said, you know, I was a friend of Brooks. They had no idea who I was talking about. They're, you know, life goes on after 12 years. People die. I'm like, oh, sorry about your friend. Oh, she was doing your job, you know, whatever. So I reached out, and then they sent me a form, and then I was like, I might as well fill it out. Maybe I won't get in it. And then I filled it out, and then I was such a big shot. They wanted to know how much you're going to raise. And I thought, well, if I undervalue how much I'm going to raise, they'll never pick me. So I better fucking go high. And I'm thinking now I'm a big mocker now. I can raise $5,000. So I put down $5,000. And then, you know, a couple months later, congratulations, you're in the New York City Marathon. Oh, fuck. So, like, this is now we went from January to February. By March, I got into the New York City Marathon. And that's it. And then I'm, like, committed. And then that's the other thing is, like, you say you're going to do something, you do something. So I committed to it. My wife thought I was crazy. My friends thought I was crazy. I thought, well, you know, maybe I just didn't train right the last time and maybe it'll go better this time. I had spent 5 years on the Peloton after the panty, and I really felt like that was a better start. Like I had much more, I had different musculature. Shout out to George Takei. Musculature around my knees. And then I got the MRI. I got the MRI on my knee and a slight meniscus strain, but nothing crazy. And then I started training. I used the Hal Higdon method. Hal Higdon, if you're a runner, Hal Higdon is the master of marathons, and he's the one who has gotten people over the finish line for like 60 years. The guy's like a pro. And he'll give you a list. He'll give you a training schedule and stuff like that. Trained, and you probably heard all about it. I wouldn't shut up about it because I wouldn't shut up about it. I got to raise all that money, you know, or although Michael J. Fox didn't come after me with that baseball bat, you know what I'm saying? Raised the money. Did the training. I was dedicated to the training there. I only missed 2 days of training. The 2 days of training I missed was I was supposed to run a long run when I was teaching at the Center for Mental Arts. And then I was supposed to run a long run when I was at the Maker Camp. That's it. Other than that, I felt pretty good. I was on a very tight schedule. I was running in the mornings before work and then on the weekends for the long runs. And it kind of killed my summer. Actually, I did miss one of the early runs when I was in Barcelona, but it kind of killed my summer. But at the same time, I honestly felt like this is something I have to prove to myself that I can do it. All right, so we're there. Okay, I've given you the backstory. This is a spite job, ladies and gentlemen. I run on spite. Actually, I have a conversation with myself because this spite game is wearing thin. Okay, I think I've gone through a metamorphosis on my whole I run by spite. I think I'm done with that. But or at least I'm aware of the fact that it's an irresponsible manner of motivation. I love spite, ladies and gentlemen, but like I don't need to spite myself. You know, I mean, you spite somebody else, okay, but don't fucking spite yourself. So, all right, so we're at, so last time you heard from me, it was, I was with Leah Arapach, and then after we ended the recording, and when it came up, I went down into the city. My daughter surprised me by saying that she was going to fly in with her friend. They wanted to support the race. She was like, there's no way I'm not going to go see you. So we, on Saturday before the marathon, my wife and I, and I'm, at this point in time, let me back it up. So Friday before the marathon, I had to go to the supermarket, and I had a slight awkward situation. I went to the supermarket to pick up some things. I had to pick up some food. So Okay. I had gotten my bib at the Javits Center. You go to the Javits Center to pick up your bib. It's like you have to have multiple forms of ID, and then they scan you, and you have to have the app, and then you have to download the app, and they give you your bib, and you have the bag. And when you go to the race, the bib, which we're going to talk about in a minute, the bib is like has got all your information on it. When you're running, all this stuff we'll talk about in a bit. And then you get a plastic bag with all this stuff inside. And then the plastic bag is the only bag you're allowed to bring with you to the marathon. So bring that back. Friday, I got to go pick up a couple things. I don't know. I got to pick up some, you know, I'm going to bring up Sam. I want to bring like a, a bagel or something like that. I went to the supermarket. And out of nowhere, my phone rings. And I pick the phone up, and it's the place that my mother's at. And all of a sudden, I hear my mother on the phone. Now, I've kind of been hinting at the fact that she doesn't know who I am. For the past 2 years, she hasn't really acknowledged me as her son. She hasn't really even said my name. She usually identifies me as her brother, and I'm fine with that. I want to make her as comfortable as possible, and I want to make her as, like, I'm laughing because something happened on that phone call, and it was still pretty funny. But I want to make her comfortable and not confused. So she doesn't call me often, and I actually told them, I visit her, and I've told them not to let her call only because it just makes her it makes her confused, right? So they had her out, and I don't know what happened, and they got her to call. And like I said, this woman, she cannot walk. She doesn't really know what's going on. Like, if you have a conversation with her, her dementia is that she doesn't really remember any of the conversation. She remembers some things, but she doesn't remember people or names. She doesn't really, you know, and then we could have a really nice conversation, and then she's just, time doesn't really work with her. You know, it doesn't really, it's very sad. And, you know, all jokes aside, we're just doing the best we can, but we don't visit her often. But when she calls, it's a problem. Usually what happens is they'll bring her to a nurse's. She'll be sitting with the nurses talking with them. And then she'll convince one of them to call their, you know, her home. And then they'll just call. And she's just like, pick up the phone. Cause when the place calls, I answer. You know, something wrong. I mean, sometimes something's wrong. This is Kathleen. Where are you? I'm like, Mom? And she's like, yes, I can't stay here for another minute. I need you to pick me up. And I said, Mom, you're not getting picked up. She goes, I have nowhere to stay. Well, she's got a room. She's a room that she, and they take care of her and they bring her food. And I said, what am I going to eat? And I'm like, well, the nurses are going to bring you to your room. What nurses? Like the nurses that they gave you the phone and dialed the number. Well, I don't even think I have a room here. And I said, Mom, you have a room here. Don't worry. This is a place that they take good care of you and they keep you clean and they bring you breakfast, lunch, and dinner and they monitor you. And they, you know, if they need you, if you need to bring, I'll go for a, you know, they roll you around if they need, if you want to be rolled around. They take good care of her, really good care of her. And then she's just getting confused and agitated, and she's, you know, after, and I'm in the supermarket hiding because all of a sudden people are passing me that I know, and I'm just like trying to have this very awkward conversation, and I'm saying Mom very loudly, and, you know, it's all very, you know, I'm trying to like calm her down. She can't hear me. Whole thing's a wreck, ladies and gentlemen. It's just like, and I'm just like trying to get myself, you know, get me myself mentally ready to run the New York City Marathon. And, we go on and on and on. And she goes, well, my ex-husband's here and I think he's going to pick me up. Now her ex-husband is my father who's been dead for 15 years. So I'm surprised. This is the first time she's brought him up. Usually when she talks about herself as in she's a child and she asks about her parents. This is the first time she's talked about her ex-husband, you know, my father who she hasn't talked to in 20 years. So she says, my ex-husband's here, and he's planning on picking me up. And I said, oh, you don't say. And she goes, yeah. I said, well, tell him you're good. Tell him you don't need a ride. Oh, so I should tell him to buzz off, she said. I should tell him to buzz off. I'm like, yeah, tell him to buzz off. And she goes, your ex-husband. So first she says, my ex-husband's here with a guitar. I said, Ben Ben plays a guitar? And she goes, no, a car. Ben's here with a car. I'm like, oh, Ben's here with a guitar, huh? With a car? I said, yeah, don't tell them not to pick you up. I got it just squared away. I'm going to talk to the people. Don't worry. They're going to get you back to your room. You don't need to go anywhere. Don't go with your ex-husband, my father. And I start kind of like laughing because just the way she's talking about her ex-husband is in like the thought of my father dropping everything to pick her up is like so far. I mean, if you want to know if a person's got dementia, my mom had dementia because she thought my dad was going to drop everything to pick her ass up. That's real dementia. My dad, that would have been farther from the truth. So we're talking, and I just turned to him. I'm like, you know what? I said, I got her squared away. I said, hey, if you see Ben, send him my regards. Like, if you see Ben, send my regards. And she goes, okay, I certainly will. And I'm like, all right, Mom, listen, you're going to be okay. I'm going to come visit you soon. I love you. You're going to be okay. And she starts to settle down. But I just remember she said to my ex-husband's here. I'm like, you don't say. Tell him I send my regards. You know, fuck it. I mean, the spirit of my father's there. Tell him I said, what's up? So it ended in a funny way, but at the same time, it was quite jarring, as it always is. So I get back to the house. I'm trying to get myself squared away. I'm trying to relax. I'm trying not to do much. So Saturday, we wake up, and then we go to the airport to pick Lila and her friend up. And it was really, really amazing seeing them. We drove into the city. It was just so sweet that she came to visit, to cheer me on. We drove into the city, and then I went to my friend Eric's house, my high school friend, who actually, after we finish this recording, I'm going to go down and see him. I'm going to go see him tomorrow night. We're going to go to the Knicks game. He and I go to Knicks games. He's one of my oldest friends. And he put me up in his apartment, and he made me great dinner. He made great dinner, and we just had a really great time catching up, as always, just talking about, you know, he's my high school friend. We're both 51. And we both have daughters around the same age, and we have, you know, similar things going on with our family life and our parents and aging parents. And, you know, I knew his parents, he knew my parents. It's just kind of like this. It was really, really great. Woke up the next morning, marathon day. We watched part of the World Series, and it looked like, before I went to bed around third inning, it looked like the Blue Jays were going to win. And guess what? That's not the case. Fuck the Dodgers and congratulations. I had to wake up at 4:30 something, because there was a bus waiting for me on 30th and 6th. So I hopped in an Uber, ran to the bus, and the bus was the Michael J. Fox Foundation bus. And the whole thing was they were going to take us to the starting line. The starting line is at the Verrazano Bridge, that's in Staten Island, and then there's a couple ways you can get there. You can usually, most of the people getting in the marathon are either had a charter bus or they were taking the Staten Island ferry. Now, here's where the bib's interesting. So when you figure out, when you decide to, you know, get in, if you have access into the marathon, you can put all your information in. It asks you how you're going to get there, and all that information is on your bib. So, like, if you're going to take a ferry, it'll say on the bottom, it'll say, you know, Jeff Vader, 6:30, you know, Staten Island Ferry, and they're color coordinated, and there's waves, and everything on your bib has a meaning. There were hundreds of thousands of people being part of the logistics of this marathon, which is unbelievable. I didn't have to take the ferry. I could have, but I thought it was just too much. You take the ferry, and then from the ferry, you get on the bus, and then the bus gets you to the starting line. Michael J. Fox Foundation had a charter bus. We got on the bus, went straight to the starting line. And then we get off the bus. It's still dark. And then we have to go through a metal detector. And then we have to show our bib at all times. It'll be a color of a bib. It'll show the wave and the time you're supposed to start. Unfortunately, my bib said that my wave was to start at 11:30. So they had five waves going every half an hour, and then there were you'd go to the color waves village. So they had five waves, and each wave had its own village. And the villages had so we get on, go through the metal detector, walk through this huge, there's 59,000 runners, right? Everyone's wearing old clothes because the move is there's no way to get your clothes back to the starting line. So what you do is you bring all your stuff in the plastic bag they give you, and then you wear clothes that you want to donate to stay warm. And then right before the race, you donate all your clothes in the big box, and then it goes to donations, which I think is terrific. Walk to my village. I'm one of the first people there. I get there by like 6, and then I got to chill for 5 hours, which sucked. But at the same time, I'm such a neurotic about being late that I just did not want to be late. I was just so afraid of being late. I strolled around, they had Dunkin' Donuts there. I had a bagel, had some coffee. We had some, walked around a lot, talked to some people. It was a lot of waiting, a lot of watching, took some beautiful sunrise pictures, and people were getting fired up. And then, you know, we were by the local, newscasters, watched them for a little bit. So then we get closer to the time, and I met up with a friend of mine who was also running. It was her 30th birthday, and we met up, and we were fired. It was really cool to see a friend of ours from the town also running the marathon. Now, I had a fully charged iPhone, fully charged earbuds, and I had a fully charged Garmin watch. So everything was fully charged, and it was going through the Bluetooth. I was like Bluetoothing like a fucking madman, right? The Garmin tells you where you're running, how you're running, where you're running, you know, your hours, you know, how long you're running. You know, it's a pretty good way of getting a better idea of how things are going. Ready? It's 11 o'clock. We're ready to go. Go to the corral that I'm supposed to be in. And then they walk us up to the Verrazano Bridge. It's a beautiful day. And then they sang the national anthem. And then they had a howitzer. He said, all right, runners ready. And then the howitzer goes off. The howitzer goes off to start the fight. I mean, it was fucking crazy. They were like, it was a huge event. It was 59,000 fucking people. The funny announcements they made, and this is something my friend Miles had told me years ago, was apparent. So the Verrazano Bridge has an upper level and a lower level. So I was in the lower level, and then there's the upper level. So apparently back in the day, back in the 80s and the 90s, it was a very traditional thing to pee over the side of the Verrazano Bridge. And then the people on the lower decks would get urinated on. But they made an announcement. They made a big announcement, loud as fuck. It said, urinating on the Verrazano Bridge will lead to disqualification. So there was none of that. The howitzer goes off, and we're starting in. Now, the whole idea is like, you got to be careful when you're running a marathon. So I trained on asphalt, and I also trained on me personally knowing that I don't really warm up until the third mile. But the first mile the bridge is almost 2 miles long. So you're on the Verrazano Bridge for almost 2 miles. And they say that you should not go fucking full blast on the first, you know, when you're on the bridge, because you're so keyed up. A lot of people are, this is their first time marathons, and a lot of people are super keyed up, and you just want to like get your time right. You want to get your PR, right? And they suggest that it's really important to not go crazy. So I was really like, all right, I'm just going to like warm up on the bridge. Now back to warming up on the bridge and urinating. The move is you got to hydrate the days before, and then you have to go to the bathroom as many times as possible. I use the porta potty a lot, and I got the greatest tip I got from my guys who I got my shoes from, the Croton Running Company. They said, whatever you do, bring wet wipes with you to the starting line or to the village. That was the best goddamn advice I'd ever had in this whole situation, because I was able to wipe off the seat, because people are crazy. These runners, they fucking put their feet, I don't know how they urinate, but some of them just get up on top and squat over and blast the whole joint. But I could wipe myself. Everything was good. And I went to the bathroom a million times. I was getting messages from people. Craig Lockwood was suggesting that I was peeing or pooping myself. If there's a guy who doesn't know how to fucking run, you're not peeing, you're pooping yourself. Right? Start running, get over the bridge into Brooklyn, getting on the highway. The light, it's later now, so we're probably heading towards, you know, we're touching noon. I practice running at around like 8:39, so this is kind of a later in the day for me. The streets are quiet in the beginning of Brooklyn because it's like the highway, and then you get into Brooklyn and the streets are going crazy. People are loving it, and this is a generational tradition, which I've realized, which I love. Young people are out on the streets and they're having a party. Everybody was having a good time except for one group of people. The Hasidic Jews of Williamsburg, who I know are not crazy about the New York City Marathon, were super duper not crazy about the New York City Marathon. So I got to back it up a little bit. When I was a kid, my sister lived in Williamsburg. And my dad, when he took me there, he says, we're Jewish people. We need to see our people. We need to look and meet we need to go and walk around the Hasidic neighborhood. Hasidic people, Hasidic Jews are a different type of Jew. They're a much more Orthodox Jewish community. You know them because the guys have long beards and the kids have payas, which is the earlocks, and they wear the big hats and they wear the plain white shirts and then the coats, and then the women are, you know, they're wearing wigs and they're all buttoned down, and they're, you know, everyone looks the same. Kind of like I used to refer to the Hasidic Jews as the urban Amish. Still works. But when my dad took me, I'm just like, really? He's like, these are our people. These are the Jewish people. We need to see this Jewish people. Why don't we go into fucking Williamsburg? They're staring us. They're not staring. They're glaring. They're glaring at my father and I. And I'm just like, and I'm just looking at my dad. I'm just like, I don't think we're welcome here. And he's just like, no, you need to know. And they are glaring. We are clearly interlopers in their neighborhood. And I said, Dad, I don't think they like us here. I don't think we're their people. And he's just like, yeah, maybe you're right. That was the end of that. But it was just like this, he was trying to have this, you know, very cultural moment with his son. I'm just like, bro, shout out to the Hasidic people, but let's not pretend that we're not bros. You know what I'm saying? And at the New York City Marathon, same fucking thing. No, there were no Hasidic people lined up on the sides of the streets with signs. They were playing Frogger. They were trying to cross the streets without getting hit by runners. And it was actually quite hilarious. There's a ton of video on the a lot of reels about how they were just trying to cross the street without fucking getting killed. Not super psyched. Get through Williamsburg. We get into I'm trying to think. Before Williamsburg was like Borum Hill and all that, and it was just great. The streets were littered. People were going crazy. Their signs were awesome. People were handing food out. That's the one thing about social media that's so amazing, is that I think that there's now people are trying to get on to, like, they want to get viral for having a great sign. So there were signs like, you know, you run better than the government does. And there were millions and millions of signs. Now, here's the problem with me. I was so afraid that I was going to get caught up in the moment that I really tried to keep my head down. I had my sunglasses on and my hat down. I really wanted to keep hydrating. I wanted to keep going. And I really wanted to, my job was to do better than I did when I was 39. So through Brooklyn was a fucking party. It was amazing. People were playing music and bongos. I saw some friends of mine from summer camp who camped out for me. Then I saw some other friends. I saw some people. And all the while, the New York Roadrunners Club came up with an app. And the app would tell you, people could look at your bib number, and then they could track where you were. There was a chip in the bib. And then the chip would be able to tell people where you were. The problem was so many people were using it, the fucking app crashed. So all of a sudden, I'm getting phone calls and texts. Where are you? And now you can't answer the phone, but then Siri's telling me I got a phone call here, a text here. And then by the time I get to Queens, I get to the Pulaski Bridge. If you see the reel on Fader Knives, you'll see the last video of me that I took was at the Pulaski Bridge, which is the halfway point in Queens, the bridge that separates Queens from Brooklyn. And My phone went, I had 10% power because all the people, where are you? Where are you going to be? I'm trying to plan these things out. And I'm just like, I'm trying to figure it out. And then my playlist and then the Garmin and the Bluetooth was sapping it energy. I mean, my phone was dead by the time I got to Queens. I had 10% left. And I was just like, all right, well, everybody's on their own. And now I have to raw dog the rest of this marathon because I don't have enough power. I need to make sure I have a little bit of power so I can reach my family when I cross the finish line. So I got to raw dog the rest of this marathon. I get to the halfway point. I'm feeling pretty good. My pace is pretty decent. I'm noticing that it's much harder, and a lot of it's because of the concrete and the steel that you're running on, which is not nice. Get over the Pulaski Bridge into Queens, Long Island City. Then you get on to what I can only describe as hell on earth, which is the 59th Street Bridge. And I call it hell on earth because now we're in towards the afternoon. It's like 2:30. The sun is high and we're running across the 59th Street Bridge, which is the way the lighting was. It was like, I was explaining to people, like it was like being in the, a Hieronymus Bosch painting about hell, because it was dark and it was dirty from soot and sand. It almost looked like a backdrop. It could have been like a backdrop for the movie Dune, because it was just like everything was very brown and dusty and rusty and dusky, and people were plodding along, and running on the 59th Street Bridge is brutal because it's straight up and it's all concrete and steel, and it's just brutal. Just fucking brutal. And you don't hear anybody. All you hear is everybody, all the people running and the plodding, right? And then as you get over, I mean, it was hell. I mean, the 59th Street Bridge was total hell. And then as you dip back into New York, all of a sudden you start to hear everybody. And then you get onto First Avenue, and then the crowd's going wild. Now, most people put on their jerseys or on their bib somewhere their name, because then what happens is the spectators are yelling your name. Well, I didn't want to write Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, because I was going to get so ticked off if people just said, go G-off, go golf. I would have just gotten so irritated. And I didn't want to write Fader, because I thought people would just go Fetter, go Fetter. That would annoy me. So I thought I should write, run. My sister passed away, as you know, Jenny. And I thought I should write Jenny. But then I'm thinking to myself, people are going to think that I'm transitioning. And I don't want that either, which is hilarious, because it's just like, obviously I'm not, but at the same time, it's like, you never know. So then I wrote for Jenny I wrote for F-O-R and then Jenny. And I figured that's good enough. People know that I'm running for Jenny, right? So every so often I hear somebody go for Jenny. The move is you don't want to give people too much interpretation. You got to do a name. Like, there was a woman I was running with, didn't know her name was Lucy. Lucy got fucking, people were digging Lucy. Lucy was getting it. She was getting cheers. People were freaking out. All it said was Lucy. Mine was too difficult to interpret because it's, I'm not Jenny and it's for Jenny. And it was too much. It was too much for the synapses to kind of, so I didn't get a whole lot, but at the same time, I was grateful too. Get on the 59th Street Bridge, get off the 59th Street Bridge on the First Avenue, and the whole place just opens up. And then on the left is my family. They told me where they were going to be. That was where they were the last time. And my daughter's there, and a friend is there, and Hillary's there. And then our friends May and Ray and Mink were there. And I just came over and I just hugged them. Now, people would hug and they'd stop and talk to their friends, but I don't know what happened to me. I felt like I needed to keep going. I felt like if I stopped, I would. So that was about, by the time I saw them on First Avenue, that was about 16 miles in. I'm fucking tired. I'm really fucking tired. I'm realizing that it's a different vibe. It's a different vibe than my 18-mile situations. And I'm also starting to notice that my time isn't horrific. Like, I'm feeling good. I don't have knee problems. I don't have leg problems like I did, but I got a tight deadline. So I just kept going. And then all of a sudden I saw my friend Eric and he was there. And then you go up First Avenue and then you're dead. But the best part is the New York City Marathon. And I wish I'd thought about this. You don't need to bring water or hydration because the marathon has every other mile, they have a water station. And by the time I got to mile 18, I decided I didn't walk, but I walked the water stations. Like I'd grab a couple of Gatorade, drink that, grab a cup of water, drink that. I'd walk the whole way, you know, through the, you know, half a block. And then that was like a little bit of regrouping. I was grateful for the water stations, and I realized I didn't have to bring, I brought my own shit because it's just like, I just forgot that they're going to have it. And I was like, I didn't really totally trust that I wouldn't be hydrated. I didn't see anybody collapsing. I didn't see anybody falling. I didn't see anybody in real problems. I did see some people in Vom City at the end, but I did not see anybody and there were no medical emergencies that I noticed. You're talking about 59,000 people, right? The streets are fucking going crazy. People are going awesome. The signs are hilarious. People are really cool, cheering you on, giving you stuff. And then get up First Avenue, and this guy goes, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I hear, if you're going to run for Jenny, you better run faster. You better run faster if you're going to run for Jenny. And I was just like, I really wanted this New York moment where I just turn to this guy and I say, fuck you. But I was so tired. I was so just like tired, but at the same time, I was afraid of losing any bit of energy that I was just like, fucking let him go. Into the Bronx, where usually there's not a lot of people, there's not as much people. The Bronx was a party. There was these Dominican people playing music. There were bongo drums and drums and cans, and people were fucking partying. It was a whole party the whole time. Every borough had a different flavor. And it was amazing. And everyone was so cool. And the funny thing is no matter what borough you'd go into, the first sign you'd see is, welcome to Queens, now get out. That was amazing. Welcome to the Bronx, now get out. It was great. And so, you know, all of them were great. And people were handing food out. There were people handing out beer. There's a woman who was handing out cigarettes, for Christ's sakes. There were drinks and water. And there were banana people and all whatever you want. There's a guy giving out pizza and hamburgers. I was afraid to eat anything. Get in the Bronx, that's about 21, and I'm starting to really cramp up. It's also getting warmer out, and everyone's starting to cramp up. And I'm just like, I got to keep moving, and I just got to put my head down and keep going. And then I saw a guy giving out half a banana, and I didn't slap people's hands. I didn't give high fives. I didn't have a fist bump. I was so afraid of getting COVID again. I was just like, don't touch anybody's hand. This is New York. Don't forget, like, we're on the fucking subway. Don't touch anybody. And the guy was giving out a half a banana. I took a half a banana, and that did it, man. And I was like, I was so psyched because I'd heard and I'd remember that at mile 20, you hit the wall where you just like, it's just mind over matter. And mile 20, I locked in and I just kept on going. I walked quickly through the water stations. I was grateful for the water stations, but then I kept going and then back into Manhattan. And then we started going back into the park. And then the funniest thing happened. We were in the park now. We're at mile 23. And I'm thinking to myself, we're close, man. We're really close. And into the park, and I know how far we've gone. And I know. And I'm like, just cross the finish line before. You've got to cross the finish line before the sun sets. I cannot cross the finish line in the darkness. And the bullshit part about it all is because I started so late. If I started earlier, it wouldn't have been the same situation. And it makes you feel as though, like when you see these videos of the oldest runners and stuff like that, and all these people finishing at 12 o'clock at night, they started at 11:30 in the afternoon. It's not like they started early in the morning and they've been running for 25 hours, you know? So I was just like, ugh, I gotta. So this guy is giving away Rice Krispie treats and he goes, for Jenny, run for Jenny. Here's a Rice Krispie treat for Jenny. And I'm not taking anything. I don't really want to eat anything. I'm also afraid of cramping up too. So then I put my hand up and I, you know, like wave him off like, thank you, no thank you. And he goes, Jenny would have taken a Rice Krispie treat. She would have done it. You should take a Rice Krispie treat for Jenny. She would have done it, which was very funny. So I laughed. And then as I rounded Central Park South, My family was there again. My daughter was there. My wife was there. Mink and Ray were there. And it was, you can see it in the reel. I kind of collapse onto my daughter's shoulder. And I'm just like, I'm fucking dead. get through, finish the whole thing. There's the finish line, 26.2 miles. And then you got it. We finished it. I finished it. The sun was still up. Thank God. And I looked at my time. And my time last, when I did it when I was 39, was 5 hours and 7 minutes, which I thought I can beat. I didn't beat it. I got 5 hours and I think 20 minutes. 5 hours and 20 minutes. 520 minutes, something like that. Did not beat 5 hours and 20 or 27. I can't remember. I can't remember. I'm locking it out, actually. I was kind of bummed out about it, frankly. I was really thought that I was doing better. I felt physically better than when I did back then, but obviously young Jeff had the upper hand, which I, tipped the cap to him. I respect. Once you get over the finish line, they put a medal around you. The medals are super duper cool. I'm actually going to get them engraved. I found an engraver not too far from me, and we're going to get them engraved. I'm going to get this one engraved, and I'm going to get the last one engraved. And I never got it done. I thought, why not? And then they give you these orange ponchos that are so cool. They're fur-lined, fleece-lined. And then you got to walk 2 miles out to get to the... Now, at this point, because of the way the traffic is, I can't get to my family can't get to me. I can't get to them. So I'm on the phone with Hillary and I'm just like dead. And she's like, let's meet at Grand Central Station. I'm like, all right, I'll get to Grand Central Station. So I'm wearing the orange poncho. I got my medal. And then 2 miles, it's a very slow, quiet walk out of the city, out of the park. And people are just like, just silence. Everyone's dead. Everybody's dead. 26.2 miles. Everybody's dead. And I smell terrible, smell horrible, it's horrible. And I did not take a leak the whole time, which is madness. Like, I don't know what happens, this whole going to the bathroom and pooping yourself I evacuated before the thing back at, 10:30, I was good to go. And then I pushed my last leak at around 11 and I was good to go. And I was good to go through the whole day into the night. No accidents, not even feeling it. And they had bathrooms along the way too. Some people are using the bathroom. I didn't need it. So I walk towards the subway, and it's a long walk to the subway. And I get to the subway, and the people on the subway were so fucking awesome. They were cheering all the runners. There weren't a few runners taking the, most people were getting picked up, and then there was me and then a couple other people wearing the orange. There were people cheering for us and congratulating us on the subway, strangers. And this, I get on the subway and this woman says, here, you need to sit. And I'm like, I can't sit, madam. I appreciate it. But I swear to God, if I sit, I'll never get back up. And this guy goes, don't worry. We'll get you where you need to go. You're the champ. It was the greatest part of one of the greatest experiences of all time is just talking to people on the subway. And I was just minding my own business and quiet, but I'm wearing this I look like I just ran a marathon. I'm wearing a fucking medal. I'm wearing this orange. I look like a giant orange traffic cone. And the people in New York are unbelievable. This is the thing about the whole situation. New York gets a bad rap because the whole time you're talking about 3 million spectators who were all in on the New York City Marathon. And they were all in. They lined the streets all day. It was a party, screaming and hollering and cheering on. Every borough had a different flavor. And the people of New York were unbelievable. This was a love letter to the city. The New York City Marathon is a love letter to the city. And it was amazing. And it was incredible. And the people of New York are amazing. And just to, now on to the next subject is, and something that I always talk about, I want to talk about it, New York, is one of the things I've been doing with Knife Talk was, especially when Forge and Fire was hot. When Forge and Fire is hot, I made an effort to say, if you're not from New York and you go on Forge and Fire and you happen to have an opportunity, let's just say something happens. Let's just say you didn't win. Let's just say you got an extra day and you don't want to sit in the hotel. Send me a DM. I'll give you an itemized tour guide of where you should go and how you should go in New York. I had at least 16 contestants of Forge and Fire reach out to me, and I gave them, and I didn't say anything, and I gave them an itinerary, and I specifically said, ask New Yorkers directions. Ask New York. Do not be afraid of talking to people in New York. Do not be afraid of taking the subway. Do not be afraid of talking to New Yorkers. New Yorkers are the greatest. And let me tell you this. New Yorkers are extraordinary. These are the, I mean, it's like, it brings tears to your eyes. Not right now. But when I was on the subway and I was just talking to strangers who wanted to know about the marathon, and they were really, really cool, and dudes were slapping me on the back and congratulating me, which was super cool. It was one of those things that's just like, this is what New York is about. New York gets a bad rap. Get to the Grand Central, people are super cool. Get on the train, people are super cool. I'm standing because I'm like fucking a wreck. And it was really, really cool talking to regular New Yorkers after the marathon and what it was like and stuff like that. It was amazing. It was amazing. It was everything I wanted except for the time. And I was afraid. And I wish I could have enjoyed it more. My wife would have loved it because she would have loved stopping and talking to people. I know for a fact that my wife, who loves, she loved being a spectator. She loves the people of New York. She would have loved to take pictures with the signs. I was so focused that I wasn't able to enjoy it as I could have. So get home, and then Monday, I'm just dead, just fucking dead. And then get to the shop on Tuesday. And then my guy comes in, and we're talking to him for a second, and he goes, I got something to tell you. He says, a job opportunity came up, and he wants to take it. And I congratulated him. And this is part of life. And I wished him well. When an opportunity presents itself, you got to take it. And he gave me notice, which kind of, I mean, I had to make changes, right? So I had all of a sudden realize I have a limited time with this guy right before Christmas. And then Carl from Tormek was coming on Thursday. He's flying in to do a short doc on Thursday and Friday. So all of a sudden, everything's in tumult, and I was like trying to figure out what we're going to do with keep my guy busy and then make sure that I'm getting enough done with him for ready for Christmas, and then get ready for Carl and do shot lists and be very involved with doing this shot list for Tormek and stuff like that. So what happened to happen was, is the knife talk and full blast had to take a ride, which is fine. You guys are all right, right? So that was the reason why I didn't have a episode. It was just like so much came over me. I didn't really even have a chance to kind of enjoy the marathon, which is good. You know, I think life is that one of that way. You don't need to like rest on your laurels, and like, I don't need to be celebrated. I was actually glad to kind of like, it actually helped me recover because all of a sudden I got to move around a lot. In terms of the body, my hips are still super sore. Some of my feet, I got some foot problems now. I got some black and blue situations that are kind of like starting to heal up. But other than that, I have taken a week and a half off, and I'm moving around a lot, walking the dogs and stuff, but I'm not exercising as much. I'm going to get back in the Peloton hard. I'm looking forward to that. And then the last thing is on Tuesday we had the mayoral election. And this is what I kind of wanted to end it on. And it was interesting because, like, you're talking about one of the greatest events in New York City. I mean, New York City Marathon is the closest you're going to get as a regular person to becoming, feeling like a professional athlete. It was amazing. And you're seeing the entire city of New York, and everything about it's great. And then the fucking mayoral election and elections all over the country happened. And I really wanted to address a couple things. And I wanted to also be nuanced. I don't really talk about politics because I find it to be so grotesque, unless someone can come up with something a little bit more interesting. I don't think that there's any real point of me. And you've heard everything. You've heard all the perspectives from like all these people. And then you come up with your own ideas and of who's what and what's what. And I just wanted to give a completely different viewpoint on the mayor of New York. I grew up in a family. My mother used to work for, in the 60s, my mother worked in the office of Mayor John Lindsay. Mayor John Lindsay was a younger, kind of JFK-looking mayor, a liberal mayor who really, it felt like a real progressive stance for New York. This is back in the late 60s. So my mother worked for him for a long time. That was her big thing before she met my dad. Mayor Lindsay was sorry to say this, but he was not an effective mayor, much like most of them are. I grew up in this, you know, in this household that Mayor Lindsay was, you know, the Lord and Savior. Mayor Lindsay was not the Lord and Savior. Mayor Lindsay was, it was a lot of smoke and mirrors. He overpromised and underproduced. He alienated a lot of New Yorkers. He did not help race relations in New York, which he was trying to do. He was ineffective as a manager. And as in the history of, like, and I'm not saying this, like, I'm not picking on him. This is the beginning stages of how New York mayors have been. My mother loved him. But like, the history record show that he was not a great mayor for New York. Now, the guy, but after him, I don't remember. I was born then. But the next mayor that I do remember was Mayor Ed Koch. My dad affectionately, and I'm joking. He used to refer to him as Ed Crotch. Mayor Crotch, he was another ineffective mayor who was trying to be a different type of mayor, a little bit tougher mayor. As you know, the life goes on, I think that he was trying to be a little bit more of a New Yorker, less opposed to this, you know, stuffy politician. But he was ineffective too. He was really, really, he really did a lot of. He did not help the LGBTQ community. He did not help the progressive gay rights that he could have, considering that, you know, when he died, they said that he had been a closeted gay person his whole life. And he really kind of didn't help with how the AIDS epidemic was in the 80s, which would have really been pretty helpful. That was quite a terrible time in New York. David Dinkins. I remember David Dinkins. David Dinkins, another liberal mayor who just, they called him a limousine liberal because he did these, he did not help with race relations. There was between Ed Koch and David Dinkins, there was a lot of, racial tension, due to, you know, just, it was, he did, these guys did not help the situation at all. Another ineffective mayor. David Dinkins. However, he was very well received to this day for what he did for the Arthur Ashe Stadium. He was very influential in the cities getting the tennis courts for the U.S. Open. But, you know, if that's what you like, fine by me. I did vote for David Dinkins. He ran against Giuliani back in the day. This was my first time voting. I think my mother knew David Dinkins, and I think that's the reason why I think that was the reason why I voted for David Dinkins, but he was not effective. Went to college, came back from college. Rudy Giuliani was running again. He lost to David Dinkins. Rudy Giuliani was running against Ruth Messenger, and I voted for Rudy Giuliani. So I feel as though me having a record where I voted as a resident of the New York City, I'm one of the only people you will ever know who actually voted for Rudy Giuliani back in 1996. It was a strange time. There were so many mayors who were ineffective and crime was not doing well. And Giuliani was a prosecutor. He came in and he beat the brakes off New York City. That was when I remember when we moved in, it was referred to as Giuliani time. Some of you may not remember. Abner Louima was a young African guy who got swept up and arrested and sodomized by two police officers with a plunger. And while they were doing that, sorry if that was a little bit rough for some of you, they were yelling, "It's Giuliani time," which was very symbolic of the hard-nosed crackdown that Giuliani did in New York, which was he hit New York with an iron fist. I remember back in the day when there were white vans with newspapers over the windows and people were getting snatched up off the streets. I remember there was a brothel by NYU on 13th Street between 2nd and 3rd, and there was prostitutes, and one in particular was a bigger woman who would stand in between the cars, and you say, "Whoa, what's wrong with that?" Well, she had a book that was upside down, which was meant to tell you that she was a prostitute. And I remember skateboarding past her. I had gone to Forbidden Planet to get some comic books. And then I skateboarded past her. And she said, "I'll skateboard you." And that was like, I laughed so hard. But at the same time, I almost died. And then I affectionately referred to her as, I'm not proud of this, by the way, but I affectionately referred to her as Jabba the Slut. Yes, Jabba the Slut. Good old Jabba the Slut. But once Giuliani time came, there was no more brothels, and Jabba the Slut had to, who knows where the hell she had to go. I remember that it became very clear that he was a rough mayor. I think that there was some artist who did a piece at the Brooklyn Museum, and it was a portrait of Rudy Giuliani made in cow dung. And he didn't like that at all. And he made a whole big effort about to defund the Brooklyn Museum. And I just remember at the time thinking to myself, fuck this guy. How, you know, I was a young artist, and young artists are just like, you know, you're supposed to be subversive, and you have a little bit of sense. He should be grateful that anyone's doing anything about him anyway. They're talking about him. He should have taken that as a compliment. If somebody had painted a portrait of me in elephant dung, I would have fucking tried to buy it. I'd be like, I need that in my fucking life. You know what I'm saying? I need elephant dung Jeff in my life, hanging in the home. I mean, that is like, I don't know how you can't be like slightly honored that an artist would throw their vial at you. I mean, that's just so, everything about it is so great. However, we were hot and bothered about old Giuliani, and then 9/11 hit. And Rudy Giuliani was the best mayor we could have possibly had at that moment. We hated him before 9/11. And from 9/11 on to, I don't know, I mean, until they got rid of him, he was perfect. He was the perfect mayor, and people wouldn't. You forget about Giuliani time. You forget about Adam Nirluwema. You forgot about Jabba the Slut. You forgot about Dung Giuliani. The guy was perfect. He said all the right things. He did all the right things. He was the perfect mayor at the time after 9/11. And I won't say anything other than that, except for I don't know what the fuck happened afterwards. I mean, he was shacked up with his fucking dude, Bernie Carrick, who was like a corrupt cop, who was like total corruption. When he served some time, Giuliani had some, you know, bad shit going on. For a guy who was used to be an AG, he certainly wasn't perfect. After 9/11, I mean, after his term as mayor. His time in during 9/11 was immaculate. He could joke. He went on the Saturday Night Live. He went to all the Yankee games. He was America's mayor. It was great. And then I don't know what the fuck happened. It was like Shakespearean. The guy turned into a total disaster. Who's next? Mike Bloomberg. Mike Bloomberg was everyone was just really nervous because everyone was just like, you know, dad, you know, Giuliani was like dad and he was leaving and stuff like that. Mike Bloomberg came in and he was probably my favorite mayor to date. What he did for the landscape of New York was pretty amazing. He did something that I didn't think anybody could do. He stopped smoking in restaurants and bars. And I thought that was going to be the end of restaurants and bars, and it wasn't. I thought he was a great mayor. I thought Bloomberg was a great mayor. I thought Giuliani was a great mayor after 9/11. 9/11 till the end, he was great. Before 9/11, I was like, I hated everything about him. Well, that's the way it is when you're a New Yorker. Love Giuliani after 9/11. Didn't really trust Bloomberg until the end, and Bloomberg was a terrific mayor. Bill de Blasio sucked. Terrible mayor during the pandemic. And I don't, but however, I don't think anyone could have survived the pandemic. And Adams is like, I mean, this guy, I don't know. I mean, you can have good. So here's the thing. So we got now Zoran Mondami. I'm not crazy about him. I'm also, I wasn't there. You got three terrible choices. Curtis Sliwa, who was the Guardian Angels, and I don't think anyone realizes he's been on the radio for like 25 years. He's really learned how to communicate. He was a very good communicator. However, he was a wacko. He was a New York wacko his whole life. And then Andrew Cuomo, it's like, it's enough already. I mean, you got to be kidding me. These three people. And the thing about Mondami is he doesn't have any experience. That's my opinion. My opinion is just like, guy's got no experience. However, you know, look, young people won. The young people won. And God bless them. My opinion was, it was like, I didn't vote. I'm not a resident of Manhattan anymore. Or New York. I think that, you know, given the choice of getting bitten by a snake, hit in the head by a baseball bat, or kicked in the balls, I mean, that's your decision. I mean, that's what that three-threer is. Andrew Cuomo getting hit over the head, Mondami's getting bit by a snake, and then Sliwa's hit by the balls. You can switch them all around. Doesn't matter. All three of them are not great. However, this is who we have. Every time someone votes for a mayor, it's always a reaction to the former mayor. And this guy hit all the bells that people wanted. And, you know, here's what I'll say. I got irritated by all the outside of New Yorkers who had things to say about Mondami and, well, you're going to be a communist and all the people are going to leave and you know, everybody's going to Sharia law. Bros, you got to know what the fuck you're talking about. Number one is every single time a liberal mayor has been elected, there has been this freak out by the right that everyone's going to move out of New York and the rich people are going to move around in New York and New York's over and New York's dead. And they've been doing this shit since 2003. It's just like, give me a fucking break. New York lived through 9/11. No one moved, you know, whereas everyone was freaking out. A lot of people moved. We made it through the pandemic. Everyone is moving out of New York because the rents are too high and all of a sudden you can work from remotely. So why don't we just get out of New York in general? I mean, you're talking about two big moments that were clearly very pivotal in terms of people's perception of safety and whatever. Mondami's is going to be fine. And you know what? Let's let him be as terrible as every other mayor. You have to understand, it has nothing to do with his being a democratic socialist. It has nothing to do with any of this stuff. He's not going to affect the people of New York. Here's what he's going to do. He has all the rights and the legacy to be as shitty as every other politician who's been in New York. I don't think you realize how embarrassing it is for the Democratic Party in the state of New York. He can't do much worse. I mean, every single Democratic governor since Mario Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo's father, has left in disgrace. Let's think about that. You got David Paterson, left in disgrace. Andrew Cuomo, left in disgrace. Elliot Spitzer, who was potentially could have been the best governor we ever had, left in disgrace. He was cheating on his wife. Fucking a hooker with his socks on. I mean, you can't make it up. I mean, you're talking about every single Democratic governor, with the exception of now Kathy Hochul. I'm crossing my fingers. She holds it together. Every single governor of New York that has been a Democrat left in disgrace, right? Most of the politicians in New York are disgraceful people. Eric Adams is on the take. Let's not play. Giuliani was on the take. Let's not play. You know, David Dinkins. I mean, all he was doing is going to fucking parties. You know, Koch, he dead. We'd leave him alone, but he didn't do a great job. And Mike Bloomberg, who knows? But I mean, you're talking about a litany of garbage politicians. So instead of thinking that this guy could be as garbage as everybody else. However, you have to look at his future leading of New York through the lens of the garbage that's been before him. And I think it's unfair to not give him the credit of realizing that his destiny is probably along the same lines as most of the garbage politicians we've had. You can't do much worse than what we've had, okay? You cannot do much worse than what we've had. But I will say this. I do not like seeing people from out of town talking about New York politics like they know anything. They don't know anything. I think he's going to have a hard time. It will not end New York. It will not run. The millionaires aren't going anywhere. Okay. The fact is New York City has always been too expensive. And it's just getting exponentially expensive. And you've got to figure out a way to stop some of these landlords from just saying that, just charging whatever they think whatever they can get. It's just not right. But at the same time, I wish this guy, you know, I'm optimistic because I'm a New Yorker and we've lived through all of it. We've lived through all of them. I personally think this is going to be John Lindsay 2.0. And hopefully John Lindsay 2.0 is a lot of smoke and mirrors, not getting much done. And John Lindsay was someone who catered to progressive things without kind of focusing on a lot of, you know, regular people and working class people and stuff like that. So I think that this feels like John Lindsay 2.0, but I'm hoping I'm wrong. And look, I hope I'm wrong. I wish him best. I wish New York the best. The people of New York will get through this. We'll get through anybody. I don't think they would have gotten through fucking... I think that if Curtis Lee would have been the mayor, I think it would have been a fucking wreck. I mean, he's just a crazy cat guy. I mean, it's like enough. I mean, he played around in the subways back in the 70s, 80s. You know, I don't think it would have been. I think he would have been a far less effective mayor. And I think that Cuomo is scum. I think that these whole family things. I think it's enough. No, we're tired of all these like legacy politician families. It's like you're not entitled. You as the viewer have to understand that they work for you. Don't be a fan of theirs. Hold them to account. I hold them to account. My mother was kind of available to talk to me about John Lindsay, and I said these things. She'd be furious. But you got to hold people to account, you know? So at the same time, however, you got to hold people to account, but at the same time, give the guy a chance. And outside of New York, yo, I have no interest in what you have to say because you haven't lived through the garbage we've had. Once you live through the garbage we've had, then talk to me, okay? All right. I've said enough. You got to see it through the lens of garbage, okay? The lens of garbage. With that said, New York City is the greatest city on earth. This was a love letter to the city of New York, the great city of New York. Regardless of who's running it, I believe in the people. I believe in the city of New York, the city that I love the most, the greatest city on earth. And will I run it again? Will I run the New York City Marathon again? My wife seems to think I will. I really don't have any thoughts on it right now at all. I don't even want to think about it. But, you know, when I turn 55, maybe I might get the itch again. You never know. But with that said, guys, thank you for all the support. I'm sorry I wasn't here last week. There was a lot going on. And I'm looking forward to another episode, another few things. We got some good things going on. And we will see you next week. All right. Craig, take it away.